Welcome to Rabbeinu B'chaye Shir Parshas Kisisa. Wanted to start with Rabbeinu B'chaye almost right at the beginning of the Sedra, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yud Gimel. The Torah opens up the Sedra by talking about the mitzvah of the Machzis HaShekel. Ze Yidnu Kol Over Al Abkude Machzis HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh. That every Jew, every male Jew, is expected to contribute a half a shekel with the shekel hakodesh, right, with the holy shkolim. And the Rabbeinu B'chaye speaks about this phrase, the shekel hakodesh, you know, the holy shekel. In this, he echoes the words of the Ramban, which we'll see are very important in their own right. And he adds a number of reflections as to why. What the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel is all about, and what it's supposed to accomplish, and certain aspects concerning the details of the mitzvah. So, it's on page Shin Yud Dalid in the Rabbi Shabel edition. Machzis HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh Al Derech HaPshat Lefi Shehayah Moshe Melech Yisrael Ke'inyan Shekosuf Vayhi Yishurun Melech. It says at the very end of Chumash, Vayhi Yishurun Melech, he was a king in Yishurun. Mefarshim differ as to who the pronoun refers to. He was a king. Who was a king? Right, so some say it refers to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right, but others say, and this Rabbeinu B'chaye follows through on that, that Vayhi Yishurun Melech means Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he wasn't just a Rebbe, he was a king. Man Malchei Rabbonon, he was the king of Klal Yisrael. Al Kein Kovalo Matbeya Shel Kesef Ukro Shekel B'pnei Shehoyo HaMatbeya Shekulo B'mishkal Sholem. So therefore, every king deserves a currency, right? So, in other words, Rabbeinu B'chaye, again, quoting the Ramban, seems to imply that this was not a, the shekel was not a pre-existent currency, right? But rather, these shkalim were minted, lekoved this malchus of, you know, of Moshe Rabbeinu. We find shkalim earlier in Chumash as well. Arba meo shekel kesef over la socher. So those are different shkalim. This, you know, again, the same way that you could, that we used to have the Israeli lira and you had the Italian lira. You know, you could have one, you have a Canadian dollar and an American dollar. You could have multiple names for, you could have the same name rather for multiple different currencies. But this is not the same shkalim that that Avraham Avinu paid Ephron way back in Parshas Chayesara. This is a Jewish shekel. It's a different mintage. It's a different coinage, which is unique because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was a melech. Why is it called a shekel? So he says, shekel, mimei shahaya matbea kulo b'mishkal sholem, ki hoya kesef mezukok below sigim. Shekel is from the word mishkal, something that weighs, a weight. And the shekel, the value of the shekel matched the weight of the shekel. Meaning, you know, this used to be the case in American coinage. I think it's no longer the case for about 100 years, if I'm not mistaken. Right? But used to be a quarter was a quarter's worth of silver. A dime was a dime's worth of silver. Now that's not, what's that? 50 years? Yeah, that went off in the 60s? 64. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm talking to the right guy over here. Yeah.
It was costing them more to make
right. So this, you know, Rabbeinu B'chaye was talking about events that took place before 1964, right? So the, he talked about events that happened after 1964, but at least, you know, over here he's talking about pre-1964 events. So the shekel was something where the value was equal to the weight. In other words, there was no dross in that silver. That's why it's called the shekel. Ukro kodesh. Now it's also called the shekel hakodesh, the holy shekel. Now, again, just before we get to what he's going to say over here, which again is very important, part of shekel hakodesh is to distinguish it from the shkolim of Ephron, you know, the shkolim that were mentioned in Parashas Chayesara, where, again, it's somewhat along the lines of an American dollar versus a Canadian dollar. You know, they're both called dollars, but, you know, they work in different currencies. This is not the shekel of Ephron, this is the holy shekel, the shekel HaKodesh, which was minted under the leadership, the stewardship of Moshe Rabbeinu. But why specifically is it called Kodesh? Why not call it a shekel Moshe? Right, or something like that. Kro kodesh, v'nei shekol ha-mitzvos hem ikar ha-kedusha. Right, the reason that this coin is called Kodesh, the holy shekel, is because, as we know, mitzvos are the source of Kedusha. Kedusha comes about through mitzvos. V'yesh b'ksas ha-mitzvos tzorach l'mat be'ahahu. And certain mitzvos involve the use of a certain kind of coin, of the shekel. Right? For instance, k'mitzvos pidyon ha-ben, she-mitzvah chamesh shkolim. If you want to be poda, your firstborn son, you want to redeem your firstborn son, so you need five shkolim. So in other words, this shekel is an integral part of that mitzvah.
And it requires a specific weight.
Right, exactly. Right, and again, all coins are measured in terms of their weight. Right? Gam mitzvahs ha-erchin, sheni kroi in kodesh, tzrichin l'shkolim. And also you go through the parasha of erchin at the end of Vayikra, and as a person says, I want to donate my value to the Beis HaMikdash. So there too, you know, how you measure value is in terms of this currency, the shekel ha-kodesh. So, umin atam hazeh, anachnu karim loshon torasenu, loshon ha-kodesh, mipnei shehu loshon shel kedusha. It's for this reason as well, says Rabbeinu B'chai, and again here he's really quoting the Rambam, it's for this reason as well that we call Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue. Why? Mipneishu Lashon Shel Kedusha, because it's a tongue of Kedusha, a language of Kedusha. Kolel Kama Minei Kedushos, that includes various different areas of sanctity. V'chol Inyonei Kedusha Yishtam Shubo. And whenever we have an issue of Kedusha, Hebrew is the preferred and sometimes the required language. Let's see the parallel that he's drawing over here. Why is the shekel called Shekel HaKodesh? Because you need this specific type of shekel to do certain kinds of mitzvos, and mitzvos bring about Kedusha. So similarly, Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh, because there are certain types of mitzvos where you need to say something in Hebrew. Again, the Mishnah in Sota, the seventh parak, lists off that there's some kinds of mitzvahs that require a recitation, and the recitation can be in any language. But other types of mitzvahs require that the recitation be done in Hebrew, and therefore Hebrew is essential. Let's say Mikra Bikurim, you know, the statement of that the Yavama makes by Yibum, by Chalitza rather. So, you know, there are different types of mitzvahs which require a recitation davka in Hebrew, birkas kohanim, right? Can't be done in the vernacular. It has to be done davka in Hebrew. So if you need this language for the fulfillment of certain types of mitzvahs, which are kedusha, by definition, that labels the language as being Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh means the language which is necessary for the fulfillment of certain mitzvahs.
But that Lashon as well as the coin be used for the mundane as well? Or it only could be used for Kedusha?
No. So he's not saying that it's exclusively for the use of Kedusha, but he's saying the converse. In other words, there's certain types of mitzvahs which exclusively use this coinage or this language. So that means that this coinage or this language, you know, is the only acceptable currency or language for mitzvos. So mimela, it's branded Lashon HaKodesh, but it doesn't mean that you can't order a burger and fries in Hebrew, right?
But we should understand that Lashon HaKodesh and the coin is Kodesh, so
right.
Even if you use it in the mundane,
right?
You have to have
right. Right. Now, so that seems to be the next thing that he says. In other words, you know, point number one is that since these coins and this language are used for mitzvos, and they can only, you know, they are the only things which can be used for these certain types of mitzvos, so mimela, that brands them as Shekel HaKodesh, Lashon HaKodesh. In addition to that, Hebrew has many other properties which come through even when you use it on a mundane level. That's what he goes on to say, but I think this is a slightly different point. This is, you know, related to the first point, but slightly different. And he says, "Hu aloshem shebo Hakadosh Baruch Hu diber b'nei Yisrael saras adibros." I mean, God used Hebrew when He spoke to Klal Yisrael at Maimed Har Sinai. Uvo medaber im hanavim ve'im hamalachim. God speaks to the Nevi'im and Malachim in Hebrew. How do we know that God speaks to the Nevi'im in Hebrew? Maybe He dictated Sefer Yirmiyahu in translation. You know, maybe Yirmiyahu, He spoke to Yirmiyahu in Greek, and Yirmiyahu translated into Hebrew because that's, you know, the language Yirmiyahu spoke. So I think it's obvious just from reading the Nevi'im, there's so many plays on words that exist in the Nevuos. Makel shoked ani roa. Right? So Yirmiyahu says at the beginning of his career, I see an almond branch. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Kishoked ani al devari la sosa. So I'm paying special attention to make sure I carry out what I'm going to do. Now, that's totally lost in translation. I mean, you know, shoked, you know, I mean, it doesn't work in English. It only works in Hebrew. Right? So obviously the play on words, you know, indicates that the communication between the Ribbono Shel Olam and the Nevi'im is davka in Hebrew. V'shivim shemos yeshlo. God has 70 names. Kulam hem lashon hakodesh. All of his names are Hebrew. There's no secular name or anything like that. Gam shmos hamalochim nikroim b'lashon hakodesh. Shrei Gavriel nikro k'shem hagvura. Refo milashon refuo. V'yesh mehem rabim chasumim b'shem kel. Lo mar lecho sheshmo meshutof bohem. And if we look at the names of the malachim, and numerous malachim have their names mentioned in Tanakh, Gavriel, Michael, these are mentioned in Sefer Daniel, right? It's clear that the names Gavriel and Michael, Raphael I don't think is mentioned in Tanakh, but in other words, but you know, Chazal tell us that there is a malach called Raphael. These names of the malachim clearly are in Hebrew, right? And clearly include God's Hebrew name, one of God's names, Kael, you know, in the names themselves. So again, the Lashon HaKodesh is being used not only for mitzvahs, but with regard to all kedusha-oriented items.
Oh, it's one thing that says that Achmei Vesper refers to this Tzachim Sosim, Tzachim Kuna, Tzachim Kuna, does that mean that the din that a person gets here for 120 is all Lashon Kodesh?
It's an interesting point. L'chara, yeah. In other words, l'chara, the din that's presented to the person is in Lashon HaKodesh as well, because the neshama understands Lashon HaKodesh, right? Words, everything that goes on up in Shamayim, whatever this means exactly, is, you know, is in Lashon HaKodesh. That's the official language of heaven, is Lashon HaKodesh. V'hu alashon shebo nivra ha'olam. K'mo shedar shu razal. Ha'olam nivra b'lashon HaKodesh. The world was created in Lashon HaKodesh. Right? And they bring a raya. Shenemar lezos yikare isho kime ish l'koch hazos. Why is Chava called Isha? Because she's taken from Ish. Now again, all of that only makes sense if we assume that they're speaking in Hebrew. Right? I mean, again, that's, you know, all of these explanations of names from the very beginning of time assume that people are speaking in Hebrew. All of the names that we have, you know, Noach, Zeinach, Hamenu, Mimaseinu, Mitzvon, Yodeinu, and all the names make sense in Hebrew, right? It's not that his name was, you know, Bob, and they called the, you know, why do they call him Bob? Because he's gonna comfort us. No, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. He was Noach, Zeinachameinu. You know, all the plays on words, you know, all the explanations of the names only make sense in a Hebrew context. So Adkan, that's the, you know, the Rabbeinu B'chai is quoting here from the Ramban, you know, that Lashon HaKodesh again is so called because of the fact that it relates. It's necessary for certain inyanei kedusha, for certain things having to do with mitzvos, and beyond that, it's the lashon that's used by God in all, you know, holy and celestial kind of manners. It's interesting to note the Ramban in this regard disagrees with a Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, a very fascinating Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, where the Rambam writes that the reason Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh is because there are no terms in Hebrew itself for the sexual, direct terms for the sexual act or for those parts of the body. In other words, anything that we use for in classical Hebrew, at least, again, not talking about modern, you know, in modern Ivrit, obviously the names for different parts of the anatomy, but, you know, in classical Hebrew, you know, the reproductive organ is referred to as the Aver, right, the organ, without really giving it a name, and, you know, classically in Lashon HaTanach, when we want to talk about a sexual relationship between a man and a woman, it's referred to as Yediyah or Bia or something of that nature. You know, those are all, in a sense, euphemisms. Those are terms which are used in other contexts. There isn't really a specific name for the act itself. And says the Rambam, the fact that Lashon Kodesh avoids speaking about those kinds of things directly, not even having words really for those things. All of the words that we use are borrowed. That's a sign that the Lashon is the Lashon HaKodesh because it skirts, there's a tznius that's built into the very language itself.
When the Rambam explains Lashon Kodesh, does that mean that there's a special hinder? Let's say, for example, I can use an art scroll, English Schottenstein, or I can use the Hebrew. Is there a special hinder that I should not use the Hebrew because it's Kurdish? I mean, is there any, or does it make a difference? Can you point to that?
I don't know. There's the Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos to Masechta Avos. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Have zor b'mitzvah kalu k'vachamura." You should be as careful with a smaller mitzvah as a big mitzvah. So the Rambam says, "What's called a little mitzvah? Learning Lashon HaKodesh." Right. So again, it's not a mitzvah gedola. It's not a, you know, it's a, but there is a mitzvah apparently. You know, in learning Lashon HaKodesh, I guess in using Lashon HaKodesh to an extent. Yeah, so maybe, you know, maybe if it doesn't impede the, you know, if you can understand in this one just as well as the other one, maybe there is something to be said for Davka using the Hebrew. Right? The Rabbi Rabbeinu Chai himself goes on to add a little bit to this Ramban, and he says, "V'hu alashon shekol ha'umos v'chol halashonos asidim achzor elov." In the times of Mashiach, when the nations of the world discover the Ribbono Shel Olam and come back to the worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that means that the nations of the world also are going to all be speaking Hebrew. That's going to be what's going to be in the future. What's the source for that? So he quotes the very famous pasuk in Tzfanya, with a, I think that may be an oxymoron, a very you know, famous pasuk in Tzfanya, but it happens to be, it's a famous pasuk in Tzfanya. Shenemar ki oz epoch el amim safa brura likro kulon b'shem Hashem. Tzfanya is talking about what's going to be at the end of time. And Tzfanya describes how all of the nations are going to all call out in the name of God and serve Him shoulder to shoulder. And the Lashon of Tzfanya is, Epoch el amim safa berura. I'm going to have them all speaking a clear language. So what does that mean? So the Rebbe Rabbi Chai takes that to mean they're all going to be speaking Hebrew. So, you know, it's a clear language. The truth is, you know, you talk to people who are learning Hebrew, and one of the things they marvel about the language is how logical a language it is. English, in contrast, is a very illogical language. You know, you can have one word that means multiple different things. You try to figure out spelling in English. I mean, Baruch Hashem, you know, we have something called spell check nowadays, so nobody really needs to spell anymore anyway. But, you know, try explaining to somebody how to spell the word eight. And what eight is, right? Is eight a number? Is eight, you know, the past tense of eating, right? What about through, right? You threw a ball, right? That's spelled one way. I went through the shul, right? That's spelled another way, which doesn't make any sense. How do you spell? Yeah, O-U-G-H. Why does that make any sense, right? Again, you know, the English language is very, very difficult to get down. Hebrew is very methodical. It's very logical. You understand the Shoresh. You understand how to conjugate the Shoresh in various different, you know, places. You understand it, again, as we go through Lashon HaKodesh, we understand the deeper meaning of how Shoreshim are related to one another and how Gematria works in. Hebrew is an incredibly deep language with, you know, incredible beauty to the language. That's the Safa Brura. That's the clear language which all of the nations of the world are going to adopt, says Rabbi Rubachaye at the end of time. What's that? Right, exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So that's the first thing. You should understand that the reason this is called Shekel HaKodesh is related to the idea of Lashon HaKodesh, and a little bit of a digression about why Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh. Back to the Machzis HaShekel. Why were the Jews asked to give a half a shekel as opposed to a full shekel? You know, I mean, once you're hitting them up for money, might as well hit them up all the way, right? You know, why maxis hashekel? So he says as follows: Nei Yisrael avru b'maisa ha'egel al aseres hadibros. The Jews during the maisa ha'egel, the construction of the egel asav, violated the Ten Commandments. Umachzis hashekel hu eser geiros. A half a shekel is 10 geiros. What are 10 geiros? So the pasuk tells us, this pasuk, esrim geira hashekel. Right? A shekel is composed, now there's the smaller unit of coinage that goes into a full shekel is 20 geira. Right? It was like, whatever, you know, there's certain 100 pennies go into a dollar, so 20 geira go into a shekel. So how many geira, this sounds like, you know, the algebra regions, how many geira go into half a shekel? 10 geira. Oh! Hare ha shekel shalom esrim geirahu. So machzis ha shekel hu eser geiros. Right? So a half a shekel is 10 geiros. Ulefika chayim evi kol echo de echo miyisrael eser geira. That's why the Machzis HaShekel was chosen. Not because it's half a shekel. Again, there are many other answers to this question. You know, every Jew should view himself as, you know, dependent on the other person. Again, all very beautiful homiletic interpretations. Says Rabbi Bechaye, it doesn't have to do with the half a shekel. It has to do with the 10 Geira. 10 Geira is a kapara for the Aseres HaDibros, which were violated when the Jews built the Eikel. Now, by doing this, Rabbi Bechaye, very, you know, like, subtly, has, you know, really done something incredible here in terms of the parasha. Rabbi Bechaye has connected the beginning of the parasha with the Machzis HaShekel to the middle of the parasha with the Chet HaLeikah. And consistent with what the Gemara says elsewhere, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always puts the antidote before the machalah. So this parasha also, very beautifully, according to Rabbeinu Bechaye, you know, introduces the kapara for the chet ha'egel even before we get to the egel itself, as we're going to get to a little bit later on in the sedra. It's subtle. Rabbeinu Bechaye did that, and you probably didn't even notice that he did that. He was so nonchalant about the fact that the Machzis HaShekel is a kapara for the chet ha'egel. Right? What's that? Yeah, you noticed it. Okay, but not everybody noticed it. Right? So, but he was so nonchalant about the fact that the Machzis HaShekel's purpose is to be mechaper for the chet ha'egel. So there's a certain symmetry to the way now the sedra of Kisisa is composed. We start off the sedra already with that element which is going to be mechaper for what's going to come later.
So which came first? Maybe we could say it came after the egel, no?
Right, but again, it would be consistent. And the Ribbono Shel Olam has an idea, again, of Machzis HaShekel independently. But he reveals that idea of Machzis HaShekel before, at the very beginning of the parasha, to set the stage that, you know, whatever is going to come down the line, there's a Machzis HaShekel which is going to accomplish the kapara. What's that?
The egel was a few months before.
What do you say? Because they were only collecting for the Mishkan afterwards.
So, yeah.
But you don't know when this is revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? That nekuda we don't know. Right? In other words, yes, it's true that they collected the Shkalim, you know, later on, after Yom HaKippurim, but in terms of when the tzivu was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, again, Parshat Pshat was given at this point in time, before the Maestro Eko. That's why it's included at the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, I think.
Gehu right? A hey or no?
I'm sorry? With a hey at the end. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Was there nothing to shekel the coin? Was that an actual coin, or is that just a three cents?
No. So he's saying it was an actual coin. Yeah, it was a piece that actually weighed the value of the Machzis HaShekel. So that's one thing, right? V'lo hayomevi elo miben esrim shana v'mayla. Now only those who brought the Machzis HaShekel, only males above the age of 20. Right. So why only above the age of 20? L'fisha en bezdin shomaylo manisha v'pachos mishel esrim. Because the Bezdin Shomaylo, the heavenly court, only punishes a person from 20 and on. Right? So in other words, who has to bring a kapara for the Chet HaEgel? Only those who are 20 and older. Right? By the way, this he doesn't say, but it fits beautifully with his Mahalach, that Machzis HaShekel is a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. Only men bring the Machzis HaShekel. And of course, there's the famous Medrash that the women did not participate in the Maaseh HaEgel, so their exclusion from the mitzvah of the Machzis HaShekel is, you know, fits in well with the idea that the women were not part of the Chet HaEgel as well.
The women did not participate in the Egel. Did they bring the Machzis HaShekel?
You're saying in terms of the Levium as well. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure how you fit that idea.
But they
yeah.
did bring Machzis HaShekel.
Yeah, they did bring Machzis HaShekel. Yeah.
Did these skulls have a suit on it?
Yeah, they're coins. They're actual coins. I don't know, but... I don't know, yeah? Maybe. I mean, if it's the coinage of Moshe Rabbeinu.
He said at the beginning.
Was that the image that was on the coin as well? That's what he meant?
Yeah, that's what I understood.
I don't know. I wasn't quite clear. I thought that you could interpret what he was saying over there. It's not that it had the image of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it was under the auspices. In other words, you know, quarters are the coinage of the American government. That doesn't mean that George Washington is necessarily standing there minting them, right? But again, it could be. Could be. I mean, it Right. It could be. I don't know. But I don't know. But it's clear that it was a coin. In other words, not just an ingot, you know, that you were bringing over. Right. It wasn't a slug. Okay. So, Al Derech HaMedrash, right? Skipping down a little bit. The Medrash, of course, the Medrash Tanchuma says as follows. Machsis HaShekel. Why is it a Machsis HaShekel? If Yishechotu B'Machsis HaYom. Because they sinned at the middle of the day. What do you mean they sinned in the middle of the day? Lefikach yitnu machzis hashekel. Right? That's why they have to give machzis hashekel. Hadal deksiv ki boshesh Moshe. Boshesh. Moshe Rabbeinu came at the sixth hour, i.e. in the middle of the day. They were expecting him in the beginning of the day. And he delayed till the middle of the day. And that's what prompted them to make the Ma'aseh HaEgel. So since he came midday, right? So therefore, you know, bring a machzis hashekel concerning a sin that involves something that took place in the middle of the day, right? This Tanchuma as well is linking the Machzis HaShekel to the Ma'aseh HaEgel.
Well, everything that the Machzis, everything, all the reasons why they're giving a Machzis HaShekel instead of a whole shekel is valid, but it's interesting. It gets them more financially.
Right. Well, you know, maybe is a Machzis as opposed to a quarter of a shekel, right? You don't know what the alternative would have been, right? The Al Derech HaSeichel. Let me add to what I said before. He says a philosophical approach to Machzis HaShekel. Again, Machzis HaShekel, he said, is a kapar for the egel. You know, that's his presenting Al Derech HaMedrash. You know, it's a kapara for the egel in terms of the fact that it's half, in terms of the fact that it's ten gera, right? Let me give you a philosophical approach. Hayamachzis HaShekel, vayochol yoshekel shalom in eser geras. You know, the truth is, you could have made a full shekel that would have been eser geros. You know, in other words, why did this coinage, if once we're saying that this is new coinage, it's not dependent on what Ephron did or anything like that, you know, so why was the decision made to make 20 gera into a shekel? You could, if the whole thing is 10 gera, you know, that we want to be mechapir for the chet ego, so make the shekel 10 gera, right? Why make it a machzis shekel? Clearly the fact that it's half is important as well, not just the fact that it's 10 gera. Machzis HaShekel means that when you weigh your focus in life, you should divide your focus. Right? Machzis HaShekel. Again, it's a play on words. Right? When you are shokel, when you weigh what you do in life, when you consider where you put your priorities and what you, you know, where you put your time, machzis, divide it up. What does that mean? Hanachon varoy, shiyamshich es gufo el avodas Hashem yis'ale. Right? A person should pull his body to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the body should follow the demands of the soul. In other words, don't overindulge your body. Your soul should be your ruchnius should be the ikar, should be the main thing, and the body should follow the demands of your soul. Uleitim gam ken shimshoch nafsho achar gufo bin yomer ahechrechim. But at the same time, we're not supposed to be focused on the soul alone, right? A person has to focus on his physical needs to the extent to which they're necessary. Kigon achila vashtiyo v'amalbush yeshlo sheichlezu l'osam. You have to eat, you have to drink, you have to dress yourself, right? In other words, if you're going to be totally concerned with matters of the soul and not focused on the physical at all. So, you know, that's not a way to live either. You have to have a balance. K'mo she'omu razal v'inin yomtuv k'siv aseres l'ashem alokecho u'k'siv aseres t'ye lochem. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Chalkeu Chesil Hashem Chesil Lachem, as we say with regard to Yom Tov, right? Yom Tov is supposed to be spent half eating and drinking and half pursuing spiritual pursuits. That what's true of Yom Tov is true of life in general. Life is supposed to be a balance between the pursuit of the physical and the pursuit of the spiritual. V'roi shetia kavanaso b'shtaglusa b'tsar chegufo kidei sheyavam izel to elas hanefesh. Now again, you're not supposed to pursue physicality for its own sake. You're supposed to pursue the physical in order to enable you to focus on the spiritual. Shekein motzino b'yakob avinu shishtagl b'iske hanefesh arbes reishala shishimesh b'veisefe. B'shtagl b'iske hagufa avodas hachomer arbes reishala gamke b'shtei b'nosav shalavam. Right, he makes a beautiful parallel over here, which seems to be his. Right, Yaakov Avinu spends 14 years in the Beis Medrash of Eva. He also spends 14 years working to become the husband of Rachel and Leah. It's not by coincidence, says Rabbeinu Bechaye, that both of those numbers are 14, because the 14 years in Beis Medrash was about spirituality. The 14 years working to acquire wives was about necessary physicality. Right, so there's a balance. You know, the balance is, you know, chetzi l'Hashem, chetzi l'Achem. Yaakov Avinu, who is the exemplar of Klal Yisrael, exemplifies this in his own life. There has to be a 14-year spirituality, 14 years of physicality. Again, obviously, it's not, you know, during the years that he was in Beis Sefer, he was eating and drinking. He wasn't sleeping, Chazal say. Right, but I slept a little bit. You know, took cat naps or whatnot. There was some physicality involved. Right. Also, right. He wasn't doing much sleeping over there. They didn't sleep a lot, b'chlal. Right. Right. Yeah. But you know, I mean, obviously there was some degree of physicality during the 14 years in Beis Sefer, and I'm sure there was plenty of spirituality in the 14 years in Beis Lava. But in broad terms, you know, there's a kind of zel umas zeh. You know that, you know, there has to be a balance between these two elements, the physical, the spiritual. What's that? Yeah. No, so I guess maybe he went back. He went back to Kotel for another 6 years. I don't know. Have to figure that one out. And he writes, "V'tachlis kavanoso b'avodas hachomer hoysel tuelos hanefesh hasichlis shumachsis hasheko." So roi shiyeh l'shem Hashem ki yishkol ma'asov kulosov kulam v'yichalkim b'derech hashoveh l'chol echod ma'ashiroi lo. Person has to think about his activities in life and make a proper cheshbon as to how he divides his time, right? And here, I don't think he means maxis in a pure 50-50 sense, and even though in the terms of the coin, the maxis ha-shekel is half of the full shekel, but in life, you know, you can't go to one extreme over the other. There has to be some kind of division. Now, it could be 50-50, it could be 60-40, it could be even 90-10, but as long as the person devotes what he needs to, you know, to each side of the equation, you have physical needs, you have spiritual needs, and you have to balance those two things against one another, says Rabbeinu Bechai. That's the hiskir b'shekel hakodesh. That's why it's called shekel hakodesh. Ki oz yu kol shiklei maisa v'hanagos of shkulim b'shekel hakodesh. V'yale mizel madregos haprishus v'aktusha. Because if you really spend your life cheshbening, calculating, you know, I need to eat, I need to sleep, you know, I need to work, you know, I need to engage in all these physical things, but I'm doing them with an eye towards my greater purpose in life, which is spiritual. So then that calculation, that shekel, becomes a shekel hakovish, becomes a calculation of kedusha. Again, a beautiful, he calls it derech haseichel, you know, kind of like a philosophical approach. It's a kind of Muslim approach, in a certain sense, that the whole idea of shekel hakodesh, the machzis hashekel, of, you know, realizing that you have competing things in life and you have to balance them accordingly. So that's really the message of the machzis hashekel. Putting that together with what he said before, that's why the machzis hashekel perhaps is the kapara for the chet ha'egel. Right? In other words, in what sense? So you give money and that's a kapara. What? I write a check and then all my problems disappear? Well, yeah, maybe, yeah. Right? But here, the Machzis HaShekel is the kapara for the Chet HaEgel, because the Machzis HaShekel is more than just giving money. The Machzis HaShekel, you know, recognizes, you know, it's a way of symbolizing that the person recognizes that he has to calculate everything that he does in life. If a person devotes himself to that kind of introspection and self-calculation, so that can ultimately be a kapara for the, you know, the gut reaction which brought them to the point of the Chet HaEgel, the failure to be calculated, to be miyushov, that brought them to the chet ha'egel, is now counterbalanced with the machzis hashekel.
I was thinking, you have men and women.
The women wore one half of the nation, the men wore the other half. So the women wore for a half that were not involved in the Eagle.
So it's a Machzis HaShekel, the one half was involved, the other half was not involved. Beautiful. So he writes just a little bit further. Going to skip through the Kabbalah part a little bit and just go down a few lines. L'chach nasu mikesev zeh ho'adonim hanesunim b'mishkan. What did they do with the money of the Machzis HaShekel? So we know that it was used to make the adonim, the sockets into which the boards of the Mishkan were placed. So why that could the sockets? So he says very beautifully, he says, you know, I mean, as much as you know, the sockets may have not been the most glamorous part of the Mishkan. You know, all yeshivas and all institutions have this problem, by the way. You know, whenever you cultivate a major fund, a major donor, they always want their name on the Beis Medrash. You know, they want their name on the Aron. You know, they want their name on things that are perceived as being the center of the Kedusha. You know, it's harder to get a guy to donate a lot of money for a dormitory, you know, for a lunchroom, for, you know, whatever. But the truth is, sometimes the yeshiva doesn't need a base medrash. They need a dormitory, you know, they need a lunchroom, they need a, you know, I don't know, they, you know, they need some other thing, which is maybe not as glamorous, right? So the adonim were maybe not the most glamorous part of the Mishkan, right? Certainly not like the Aron or something like that, but nonetheless, the adonim hold up the Mishkan. If you didn't have the sockets, so the krashim, the boards, would fall over, right? So the adonim are holding everything up. The Mishkan is placed into the sockets, right? Right. Again, we're going to talk about this a little bit later on in the Rabbeinu Bechaye. But essentially, you know, that which is holding up the Mishkan, you know, the adonim are comprised of this Machzis HaShekel. So in other words, this tremendous kavana, whatever is involved in Machzis HaShekel, the kapara, the sense of wanting to have an orderly life, you know, whatever he's described as being a part of this is really the foundation, that which is holding up the Mishkan in its entirety. Okay, I want to take a look at another very beautiful shorter, but very beautiful mahalach that Rabbeinu Bechaye has, and this is on the next page, Rabbi Shavel Shintes Zion, where immediately after the Machzis HaShekel, the Torah tells us of the need to create the kiyur, from which the Kohanim would wash their hands and feet before they did the Avodah in the Mishkan, and then later on in the Beis HaMikdash. And the discussion of the kiyur over here is also, you know, a little bit surprising. You know, why all of a sudden now talk about the kiyur? Why not talk about the kiyur back in Parshas Truma, when we're describing the structure of the Mishkan? Certainly later on, Vayakel Pekudei, when it describes how the Mishkan was put together, it describes the kiyur more or less together with all the other kelim. Why not talk about the kiyur now? Why talk about the kiyur now? Why not put the kiyur back in Parshas Truma when we're talking about the other aspects of the Mishkan itself? So he writes as follows. V'nosato so'al avodas o'el mo'i. You should make the kiyur. The Jewish people sinned with the Avon Ha'egel. I'm going to skip over some of the more esoteric terms that he uses there, but the Jewish people sinned with the Egel. And that's why the Machzis HaShekel was introduced to be a kapara for the Chet Ha'egel. Again, as Rabbeinu Bechaye just said in this long piece which we saw. And it makes sense that the Machzis HaShekel should be applied towards the Adonim, towards the sockets, because again, the sockets are the Yesod. They are the foundation of the Mishkan. They're holding it up. Because as he explained earlier, back in Parshas Truma, the Mishkan also represents Olam Hazeh, and as this world, this universe, is represented by the Mishkan, as we spoke about 2 times ago. The universe has 3 components to it. The Mishkan has 3 components to it. You know, it's all representative of that. So the Mishkan Hayonishon Aleihem was resting on these Adonim. That's why the pasuk describes the machzus hashekel as a reminder to Klal Yisrael to be mechaper, to atone for their souls. Yagid ki yasu b'binyan davar miyuchad mesuyim mikesav hashkolim. Yia hadavar hahu l'vnei Yisrael zikaron ki yaskiru chatom tamir v'yisnacham ubo. Ketam v'chatosi negdi somit. Fine. V'yia l'vnei Hashem l'chapir ki yisratzelo en b'yosam ha'adonim yisodos ala mishkon. The fact that the Adonim, which are a permanent part of the Mishkan, are from the Machzus HaShekel, is going to be an eternal reminder of the Jewish people. Good.
The Machzus HaShekel was given, melted, and made
Adonim. Into the Adonim, yeah.
Okay, so they were melted to begin with, made coins, and then...
Into Adonim, yeah. U'mashe nismecha parshas kiyor leparshas shkolim. So why then, after the description of the Machzus HaShekel, do we have the Kiyur, he says. Because, he says, in the schus of the Mei HaKiyur, the water which was in the Kiyur, the Jewish people were zochet to rain. What's that? You're saying at that time they didn't need rain, right? You know, l'chara he means later on when Klal Yisrael came to Eretz Yisrael, and they needed rain. The Mei Kiyur was a schus to bring down the Geshamim. He notes, Rabbi Shavel notes over here. He says as follows: Lo yodu ali makor loza. I don't know what the source of this idea of Rabbeinu Buchai is, and it was the idea that the whatchamacallit, that the Kiyur is mezaka the Jewish people in Geshamim in rain. That seems to be either original, or we don't know what the source is exactly. But let's assume that for a moment that the Mei HaKiyur, you know, are a schus for rain.
And don't we say the key to rain does not apply to Hashem, one of the three
keys? Right.
Hashem,
so. Right, but we could daven. In other words, I guess it's not a guarantee.
Right.
But in other words, it's another plug, you know, for rain on our behalf. No, I don't think it means through the Kiyur as opposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give that over to a malach or to a person. But in other words, the same way that, let's say, the Nisuch HaMayim during Sukkot, when we pour the water on the Mizbeach, so that's supposed to be a way of being mispalo for rain, or for that matter, Lulav and Esrog is a way of being mispalo for rain. The Mei HaKiyur in the Mishkan are a constant, you know, tefillah, in a sense, you know, for the idea of rain. So, okay, Vashkolim hayu tztoko. The Machzus HaShekel represents the idea of tztoko. Uvizchus hatztoko hagshomim misrabim uvivitula netzorim. Right? Through tztoko, we're zochet to have a lot of rain. When we don't give tztoko, the rain stops. V'chein darshu chazal. And this indeed is the Gemara in Tainus. Ein hagshomim netzorim. Why doesn't it rain? When people get up in shul or in public and they pledge money to tzedakah and they don't make good on their pledge, right? The same way that they make a pledge and they don't follow through, so the Rabbanu Shalom says, okay, I'm not going to follow through with the rain. You don't want to follow through? I'm not going to follow through. So we see this connection, he says, between the idea of tzedakah bringing about rain. Right? The truth is, even beyond what he's saying over here, the Pasuk in Malachi seems to indicate that. Right? The Pasuk in Malachi at the end says, Hovilu es kol ha-maser obeisa otzar, right? Uv'chonuni no bozo, som ha-shem svakos, in lo eftach lochem, eisaru os ha-shomayim. If you bring the maser, says the Novi Malachi, so says the Rebbeinu Shalom, so I'm going to open up the windows of heaven and it's going to rain. Right? So there's this correlation between tztaka on the one hand and geshamim, which is representative of physical prosperity on the other hand. That, he says, is the connection between the Machzus HaShekel and the Kiyur. That's why those two things are juxtaposed, you know, in the Chumash over here. Rabbi Shavel writes, I don't know what the makar for this idea is either. Right? Now this may be Rabbeinu Bechaye's own creative idea, his own original idea. Certainly, you know, he doesn't indicate that he got it from anywhere else, but Staka and Geshamim go together. That's what we see in the very beginning of the Pasha.
The washing of the hands, what it told me, it's abundance of water is for parnasa.
Right.
You just don't fill up. You can fill up a, like a rebias, and you fill up the whole cup. Pour the whole cup on, and pour another whole cup on.
Right. The Shlomo Kluger brings in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch. He says that where do we see this idea that's from the Gemara that Natilas Yadayim, you know, takes the person away from anios, you know, takes the, you know, it's a preventative against poverty. So he says very simple, the bracha is al Natilas Yadayim Roshei Tevos Ani. If you're makpid in al Natilas Yadayim, so you'll make sure to avoid the situation where a person, Rahman al-Islam, becomes an Ani. And his prosperity is linked, again, to this idea of water and being careful not to lose your diet.
I remember hearing recently that is the symbol for Parnassa, that if a person is having a difficult time with Parnassa, he shouldn't shut down his channels to Stokka. If you get Stokka,
right,
and Vela, Kodesh Baruch Hu will respond in kind and give
him
more
panasa. Right. So that's Chazal essentially. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. Right. And Chazal say aser to aser. You know, you should give ma'aser. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. If you want to be literally rich, you know, if you want to get parnasa, so the way to do it is to give tzedakah. Right. That's you know, even though one might say it's counterintuitive. Well, I'm going to give away money to get money. Right, so yeah, the answer is you have to give in order to get. You know, that is the way that it works. Right? Okay, so that's a very beautiful statement from Rabbeinu Bechaye. There's a lot to talk about in this week's parasha. We don't have a lot of time, so I want to really just share one last quickie. You know, tastes good. Basically, so we have a nice it's a nice geschmack. And this from the very, very end of the parsha. There's a lot to talk about over here. So, at the very end of the parsha, Lamed Dalet, Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Lamed Hey, it describes how Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai, and his face is glowing. So he has to put the veil or the mask over his face, because the people just can't deal with the glow. The very last pasuk in the parasha says, "V'rov v'nei Yisrael is p'nei Moshe, ki koran or p'nei Moshe, v'heishiv Moshe samasva al ponav ad bol adabirito." The people see the face of Moshe, that the face of Moshe is glowing, and Moshe put the veil or the mask over his face until it was time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to speak with him. So Rabbi Bechaye points out that this pasuk has the name Moshe three times. Roish tisorer bekan lama hiskar kos of Moshe shalosh pa'amim v'haya efshar lomar ki karen or panav v'heishiv es hamasva. You could have eliminated the second two times it says Moshe, right? There's such a thing in, known as a pronoun, right? V'ro b'nei Yisrael p'nei Moshe ki karen or panav v'heishiv es hamasva al panav, right? In other words, you don't have to mention Moshe's name three times. Well, derech hapshat perhaps this corresponds to the three sets of 40 days where Moshe Rabbeinu was up there in Har Sinai. We know that he was up there for 120 days, 40 days, you know, three times 40 days. V'yodua shekol maimaru maimaru nitosef bo yisron hasoga v'tosef es ora. And we know that each time that he went up another madreka. In other words, the first 40 days, the second 40 days, the third 40 days. He wasn't just consistent. Each unit of 40 days brought him one madreka higher and increased the amount of light which he was giving off. Alkenis kirbo parsha shalosh krinos kinetzal alav hod v'hodar b'chol arboim yom. That's why it talks about his, you know, illuminating, being having this luminance three times, because each time that he went up, each of the 40 days was another, you know, additive in terms of his luminance. Ubar remez kan b'parsha zos b'sholosh krinos. Right, in this parsha it talks about kikoran or pnei Moshe in three different places. Right, back in pasuk chav tes. And then the next pasuk, Vayar Aaron Chobin Yisrael Moshe v'nei Karan or Panov, and then finally the pasuk we just read, Ki Koran or Bnei Moshe. Why does it say Koran three times? Because indeed, there were three separate levels of luminance which he experienced. Uvakosu Vazer Shalosh Pami Moshe. And for the same reason, that's why this last pasuk mentions the name Moshe three times. Because again, there are three levels of luminance which he experienced. Right? Vishalosh Pa'amim Panim. Yeah, okay, same thing, right? Vishalosh Pa'amim Panim. And also says Pinei Moshe three times, the face of Moshe, again, because of that same idea. And then he writes as follows. V'hizkir ha-kosuv Moshe shalosh pa'amim lahoros ki b'chol pam b'pam ha-yo'olam adrei gosheroi likori aleo Moshe. So I understand why he repeats Koran three times and why he repeats Pinei three times. There were three, his face was illuminated three different times on three different levels. Why does he repeat Moshe three times? So he says the following. Ki milas Moshe nigzar min kimin ha-mayim mishisiyu. Why is he called Moshe? Right? He called Moshe because Bas Paro pulled him from the water. Umoshe hayu bi'alduso moshoi min ha-mayim hayu remez l'mashe osid liosid bisiknuso moshoi mimei ha-chochma bahar Sinai. As he was pulled out of the water as a child, that foreshadowed how as an adult he would go to Har Sinai and would extract the water from Har Sinai. What's the water of Har Sinai? Ein mayim ela Torah. So his being drawn from the water was a hint to what he would extract from the water of Har Sinai as well. His growth as a Torah personality is hinted at in the name Moshe. And, you know, that's why, you know, there are three times that the word Moshe, the name Moshe, is repeated, because he achieved that status in a slightly higher way three times in succession. I want to add over here something, a beautiful thought from the Sfarna, which, you know, Rabbeinu B'chai doesn't mention, but I think it works very beautifully with his Mahalach over here. The Sfarna back in Parshas Shmos asks the question, right, that Moshe doesn't mean drawn from the water. Moshe means he who draws from the water. Right? He was drawn from the water, B'lashon Kodesh, is Moshui. Moshe means he who draws others. So says the Sfarno, Bas Paro had a shtikol nevuah. She said, I drew him from the water, but he's going to draw others away from the water, i.e. in Kriyas Yamsuf. Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu is going to lead the Jewish people through the water. In that sense, he is Moshe. He's not just a Moshui. He is drawn from the water, so he'll draw others from the water. That beautiful insight of the Sfarno fits very beautifully with this Rabbeinu B'chaye. In other words, he was drawn from the water, so he will draw water for others. Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, his tafkid in life is to draw the waters of Torah for Klal Yisrael as a whole, and, you know, his ability to do that went up three different times each time he has this encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, so a very beautiful thought with which to end off the parasha.
And in the end, Moshe was left there. The Eretz Yisrael came also to Israel.
Right, and the source of Moshe Rabbeinu as well. So he really was a Moshe for the Klal. Okay, we'll pick up next week. Be'ez Hashem, Ramchanan ben Akasha, Omer, Ratzah, Kodesh Baruch.